from newstalkzb.co.nz, it's the Mike Hosking Breakfast with BNZ.
G'day there, and welcome to the rewrap for Monday. I am Glenn ZB. This is all the best bits from the Mike Hosking Breakfast in a sillier package. This morning, if it sounds like I don't really know what I'm doing here, it's because I don't really know what I'm doing here. It's a holiday for everybody except people who work on network radio shows. But that won't stop us talking about how we cover Trump's anything he does, for that matter. How the BBC reports their wages. The train strike, which may or may not be happening in Sydney, and the glitter boob march, which did happen here, sort of. But before any of that, hot, isn't it?
Here's what I'm confounded about with the weather and the media's obsession with it over these last few days. What we have here, correct me if I'm wrong, is a thing called summer. And in summertime, the sun comes out and it gets warm. And I speak from experience because in the myriad of coverage the weather has got over these last few days, they focused in on the hottest day this country's ever had, which was 1973, and I was there. I was there in 1973 at the age of 8. I remember it distinctly because it happened.
Yeah, I mean, some people may find this hard to believe, but you are very old.
Yeah. I was there. I was 8 in 1973 because the hottest day in the country ever was in Rangiora, which is just north of Christchurch, where the Ballinger name is well known, loved and respected still to this day, but I digress. Just down the road from Rangiora is Christchurch, which is where I was, aged 8, at school. And it was 42 point something degrees that day. And as all 8-year-olds do, we thought, what shall we do this particular day? I know what we'll do is we'll keep our jerseys on and we'll run around at lunchtime and see how hot we can get. And so that's what we did. And that's how I remember that day. So don't talk to me about it being hot. Here's the other stupid thing about all the coverage going on of the weather at the moment. What do we do, most of us, at any given time of the year? What we do is we go to a travel agent, we say, can we give you thousands and thousands of dollars, please? And can you book us into a place that's hot? Can you take us to the Gold Coast, the Sunshine Coast, Hawaii, Fiji, an island? Somewhere that's nice and hot, 30, 31 degrees, sunshine, I can bake all day and swim in the pool. So we pay money to do this, and the moment the weather arrives, we don't seem to know what to do with ourselves, for God's sake. We seek it out and pay money for it, and when it's here on our doorstep, all we can seemingly do is bitch about it. Enjoy it, for God's sake. Or move to Iceland.
I guess that there is a slight difference in that when we book those holidays, hopefully there's a swim-up bar involved. If we could have more swim-up bars just in our everyday lives, I think everything would be a lot better. I'm sure many of the places Trump goes, there are swim-up bars. Perhaps not in Davos, though, but cold for that.
So what we're really dealing with here, as regards Trump, is the gap. Gap between what we have in terms of the TPP, say, a deal Trump says is as bad as the Iran deal, and what he'd be prepared to live with. And that fundamentally is why not a lot is going to change. In too many areas of open competition, America simply can't cope, especially in areas like agriculture, where we're as sharp as it gets and your average American farmer would die without a subsidy and the multi-billion dollar lobby industry behind it. Basically, Trump does deals, but they're tough deals. They're deals that he might well describe as being good for America, but they're not by and large deals many others can live with. Slapping tariffs on Asian imports, as he did before he went to Davos, is not the way of the future, of course. And in that sense, Trump is on the wrong side of history. But remember what drives the rhetoric. It's not just his belief that America, given its global importance, should have all the power, but the politics of it. His backers believe it too. There are votes in his stance. Will America eventually join the TPP? Probably, but it won't be under him. America First is not America alone, is actually America alone in all reality. Just don't keep reporting it as new. He might be hard to deal with, but at least he has been consistent.
Yes, every day I just feel like there's more and more and more of Mike's Lance Armstrong arguments creeping into his defence of Trump. But maybe that's just because I'm not really a Trump fan, or a Lance Armstrong fan for that matter. Or a BBC fan, even.
People like John Sopel, for example, the Washington political editor whose work regularly appears on our television screens here. They changed the story on their website. Five times. Five. I kid you not. Five times. And each time, they had to refer to the changes back to the various departments within the BBC who clearly weren't talking to each other. And then, having changed it 5 times yesterday, having thanked the men publicly for their cooperation in slashing their wages. It turns out the aforementioned John Sopel hadn't agreed at all. So that would make it, I suppose, the 6th amendment to the story. The upside of this for the BBC is that they are at least lucky that none of these men have quit or sued. I mean, in America, you would have had lawyers and resignations raining down all over the place. And while it's reasonable to have a broad understanding of public money and its expenditure, the humiliation and embarrassment that's gone on with this fiasco, surely everyone can now see, is preposterous. Public humiliation does not address pay equity issues, and it still has never got to the real nub of the problem. The simple reality that in things like broadcasting, simply doing a similar job does not mean similar money. A woman called Carrie Gracie quit her political editor of China job because she found out Sopel, the political editor of America, earned more than her. Is it not possible that A, the BBC sees the American job as more valuable than the China job, and much more importantly, B, Sopel is actually better than Gracie and as such deserves a bigger pay packet. Nothing to do with gender, a lot to do with skill and talent. You reward skill, not the job. The value of many jobs varies depending on who does it. Anyway, upshot is they couldn't have cocked this up worse if they tried, and the great sadness is, as we suggested last year when the decision was originally made, it never had to be this way.
So while we're talking about how much people get paid, turns out the Sydney train drivers feel they aren't being paid enough. And although they've been told they're not allowed to go on strike, they might still call in sick. Yep, that's right, I'm doing air quotes.
It's The Biz on the Mike Hosking Breakfast with BNZ on News Talk ZB.
Now, just before we leave Australia, there was going to be the big train strike in Sydney today. That was called off. But they are, nevertheless, the commuters being warned of delays. They're still inevitable. The train staff, due to protest, they didn't like the new timetable. They say they're understaffed, blah, blah, blah. But then the Fair Work Commission quite rightly stepped in and called it off because it was a danger to the community. So I'm glad they've got that mechanism in place. But it is still thought drivers will call in sick and put pressure on the already overstretched network. Interestingly enough, there's a bit of pushback on this, as there is in so much industrial action, and that is these train drivers are earning $100,000 a year, and a lot of people didn't know that. Exactly, Glenn's fallen off his chair. Train drivers, and this is the problem, and I may or may not talk to Jacinda Ardern about this, because she's big on the unions, and what unions inevitably mean, and of course Australia's still a very heavily unionised country. What unions mean is industrial action, and this is what we've seen with the trains. But these guys are on to drive a train on $100,000 a year plus.
I suppose when you think
they still want more.
Yeah, but I suppose when you think about it, it's a bit like airline pilots, isn't it? You part of your job is that you're responsible for the safety of a lot of people. So you, is it not the same?
Yes, broadly. Well, why aren't we paying taxi drivers $100,000 a year?
Well, because there's only like maximum of 3 people in a taxi.
Oh, so the more people you carry, you think the more you should get paid. Interesting thought.
Yeah, and so based on their argument, given that we are in charge of the oral health of about 400,000 people of a morning, I think we should be one of the highest paid outfits going. Hang on. What, you're saying that my host is? No, I'm talking about me. Let's just talk about boobs instead.
The glitter boob parade or protest or march that was on yesterday, my great hope was certain elements of the media would ignore it and treat it and give it the weight that it deserves, which was none. Unfortunately, the Herald failed to live up to my expectations. Their reportage included the number 40. There were 40 people at the glitter boob march.
Oh, I thought you were going to say there were 40 boobs.
No. No, I wasn't going to say that, Glenn. There were 40.
Me either.
Now, that's not a protest. 40 people is not a protest that requires coverage. 40 people is a large table at Yum Cha on a Sunday.
But what about if it is 80 boobs? That's twice the numbers then.
I wouldn't say that either. The TVNZ, who equally didn't follow my advice and refused to cover it, did cover it. They had the number at 100. So, and we come back to the problem. If there was a million, somewhere between a million and 1.1 million, I understand it's difficult to count. I find it hard to believe it's difficult to differentiate between 40
and
100.
It depends on how glittery the boobs are, I suppose. Because then if the light's reflecting off them,
It can, and also if you've had to pixelate them for a network news audience as well.
What's our box number? Anyone who wants to write to ZB's complaints department about Glenn ZB, I'll give you the box number shortly.
Certainly, you know, when you're confronted with boobs in large numbers, well, I'm just speaking on personally for me, I find it hard to do maths, complicated maths problems at that point. I don't know why that is. It's just what happens. I am Glenn ZB. To be honest, not that great at maths at the best of times. That was the rewrap. I'll see you back here again with more boobs tomorrow. More highlights tomorrow.